Welcome to the SOAP video series from Oak Tree Community Church in South Bend, Indiana. I'm Daniel, this is Gary, and we are working our way through a couple of Old Testament prophets.
Yeah, three of them.
Yeah. Joel, we did last week.
Right.
For the next couple of weeks, we're going to do Hosea. And then right at the end, on the very last day, it gets only one day.
One chapter, Obadiah,
just one day's reading.
Yeah.
So one of the big things about these three is that they're very early, and we'll talk about dating a little bit. Very early prophets, which is sort of somewhat ironic to try to say that is because only one of the three of them actually has any dating information in it.
Yeah.
And that's Hosea.
But it's this one, right?
Yeah, it's Hosea.
Exactly. So it kind of goes back to even Second Chronicles that we went through. And I think everybody remembers the story of the kings of the kings of the kings. But the whole idea is after David came Solomon. The temple was blessed. God came in. Everything was great. And then... And then Solomon's son for the next 400 years was a set of kings. And we call it a downward spiral.
Yeah.
Not everyone was bad. Not everyone was terrible. But there were definitely some bad and terrible ones. The nation of Israel split into two nations. So it's during this time when these three guys were prophets.
So Solomon died in 931 BC. Right. The nation of Israel, the northern kingdom after the split, was taken into exile in 722. So there's about 200 years there, and then another 100 years or so that Judah continued, 120 years or so. Hosea lists four names,
right.
And these are some of the same names of kings that Isaiah served under,
at the same time.
These are contemporary.
Right.
Isaiah and Hosea, and their names come from the same root, Yeshua, which is where Jesus' name come from, his Hebrew name comes from, Yeshua, Joshua, Hosea, Isaiah, they all come from the same Hebrew verb, root verb, Yesha, which means to save or deliver.
Nice.
And so as we go through Hosea, it's really interesting because there's a lot of judgment, but there's also a lot of deliverance promised, too.
Right.
He is a prophet of deliverance as much as he is a prophet of judgment.
Right. So, like you were saying, another way to put what you said, a lot of bad and good, too.
Yeah.
I think we hit a lot of the bad tonight.
but
there's forward-looking, too, to the good.
So, if anybody knows anything about Hosea, it's usually one small piece.
Oh.
Right? And that
hopefully it's not quiz time.
No, it's not quiz time. His wife, right?
Being a prostitute.
Well, yeah, just that whole thing. You know, what's the book of Hosea about? Well, you know, he marries this prostitute, and you know, then he has to buy her back, and maybe that's all we know.
Yeah.
Hosea's 14 chapters, and that story is such a tiny part of the entire
that's
thing.
Very true.
That as you're reading through this, there's a lot more stuff in Hosea than you might expect.
Yeah, I do think that Hosea fits in here, and we do get the reason why God is doing what he's doing during this.
A lot of explanation.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, I would think a couple things here. Israel was turning away. Which was a reoccurring theme, especially in Second Chronicles. We actually ran out of ways of saying it. Guess what? They turned away again, but went into idolatry, which was really interesting because God called it adultery.
Yeah.
And when you from his standpoint, it really was the same thing.
Yeah.
Because you have a group of people who were worshiping idols and really taking their eyes and everything off of this God onto a false God.
Right.
And but the adultery is kind of a cool thing in there too, from the standpoint of, was Israel married to God?
Yeah.
And what we see is that there was a marriage, not in Hosea, but that there was a marriage, then there was a divorce,
yep.
And then there was a reconciliation.
Well, there will be. There will be. It's not. It's not completely done
right.
yet.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But right. the forward looking part for the for the reconciliation.
Yeah.
So you know that part's kind of cool.
Yeah.
And you know when you first hear it, it's like, wait, God was divorced?
Yeah.
You know what?
Of course, it's symbolic. Yeah. I mean, right. it's not like you know God and Israel stood at the altar or anything. But he does use this. He does. I mean, it's a covenant.
Yeah.
Right. He made a covenant with them, and he uses this marriage divorce language in multiple places.
Right.
In
the, right. So Ezekiel 16:8. Then I passed by you and watched you, noticing that you had reached the age for love. I like that part right there. Mm-hmm. I spread my cloak over you and covered your nakedness. I swore a solemn oath to you and entered into a marriage covenant with you, declares the sovereign Lord. And you became mine. I like the last part,
you
too.
Became mine.
Yeah. You know, there's just...
Yep. And so if we were going to place that, that's going to be back at Sinai. They had come out of Egypt. And so at Sinai, they entered into covenant with him.
Was that with Moses?
Yeah.
Moses asking the people, hey, are you sure you
want to
do this?
Are you sure you're going to do it? Yep.
Yes, yes.
Yep. So in today's terminology, if anyone has any reason, you know, he's looking for the I do's. And they're like, we do. Right? Yeah. So now they're married.
Yep.
You know, figured, you know, just in this conception.
And there were some good times, you know, and Israel was faithful for a period of time.
Yeah.
And then there wasn't.
Short
and they
period.
Weren't.
Yeah. Short time.
Yeah.
And so what happened? You said that there's some divorce in there.
Right. So Jeremiah tells us, I don't know if I want to read the whole thing, but it was basically because of Israel's adulterous worship of other gods. I sent her away and gave her divorce papers.
Yep.
And that's Jeremiah chapter 3, between 6 and 8.
So if the marriage symbolizes Israel's relationship with God, God is the groom, Israel's the wife, or not
right.
groom, but the husband and the wife,
right.
Then basically by following these other gods, by worshiping these other gods, she's cheating on him.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And so
which is really what adultery is and idolatry.
Right.
It is cheating. And we have a jealous God.
And we have a jealous God. Yep. Okay. And so that's why this concept of adultery shows up so prominently in the prophets. It bleeds over into the New Testament some. Jesus uses it. Every time Jesus uses it, if you're not familiar with the Old Testament, you're like, well, why is Jesus talking about, you know, adultery? He's coming right out of the prophets.
Right.
They knew exactly what he was talking about.
Yeah, didn't have to be happy about it. Yeah, so it's really cool, and again, it's important to understand because, you know, in the first couple of chapters, that's exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
It's basically God telling, you know, a prophet, I want you to get married.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, I want you to marry a prostitute.
Yeah. So he tells Hosea.
You know, he didn't say it, but I want you to see what it feels like.
That's exactly what it
yeah.
is. That's exactly
I loved,
what
I looked, it is. Did he say those words? No, you didn't have to, but that is exactly what it was for.
Yep. So go marry a prostitute, and she is going to bear illegitimate children. Right. So there's a lot of, you know, were these not even Hosea's children?
Right.
He is tasked with raising them and trying to, you know, do all that.
Yeah, and as bad as he would have felt, right? That's how God feels when we're adulterous and when we're taking our eyes off of him and idolatry and it's like, wow. I think I like it because it hits home to individual people on. Because, you know, not everybody's been divorced, but certainly in this day and age, everybody knows somebody who's been divorced.
Sure.
And just the tearing apart of families and, you know, rarely are divorces civil.
Well,
and
we hear all the time, you know, of people being cheated on and adultery and affairs and all of that. And so even if they're not divorced, there's this, you know, heart-wrenching event that has happened. Right? Can I trust you? Can I love you?
Yeah.
You know, this whole thing. And God uses
all that symbology.
One of so many action prophecies that he has the prophets act out so that they can passionately make their case.
Get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I love, and I'm jumping ahead here, in one of the later chapters that we're going to be reading this week, he jumps ahead because... Okay, they're married, right? And promises are made. They're divorced. God doesn't have to fulfill any of these promises.
Yep.
But he still wants to.
Yeah.
And he wants a reconciliation. But Israel has to come back, you know, has to come back to him.
Yep.
And So it basically says he paints them in a corner, so they have no choice.
Yep.
And it's going to be so bad for them that they'll look up and say, you know, it was pretty good when we were back under God.
Yeah.
Maybe we should go back.
So that's in chapter 3. Yeah. And I'm going to step back just a little bit to help set that up.
Definitely jumped ahead.
Okay. But to help set that up is what they were saying was as they're out gallivanting around with all these other gods, Jehovah God is still providing for them.
Right.
Okay. He's still taking care of them. He's still feeding them and clothing them and all those things. And according to chapter 3, they're running around, or chapter 4, they're running around saying, look at what my prostitution is paying me.
Right, right. They didn't even acknowledge
They're that. Not even acknowledging where it comes from. Right. So they're like, oh, we're worshiping this god. Look what he did for us. We're worshiping this goddess. Look what she did for us.
Right.
And
this
the true God, right. Yeah, and the true God is saying, I gave this to you, and they're attributing all of this blessing to these other places, these other gods. And so God says, fine, I'm going to stop.
I'm going to cut you off.
And that's that corner that you were talking about. He paints them into a corner by cutting them off. Let your other gods take care of you.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they're like,
reality,
I need to come crawling back to,
yeah,
you know, the one true God.
Yeah. Yeah. So you brought up that there are some kids. You need to talk about their names a little bit. And what's going on with the names?
Yeah, so there's two sons and a daughter, and they're named after either Hebrew phrases or a specific place. So the first one is Jezreel, and it's named after the Valley of Jezreel, where a lot of bloodshed was, maybe some child sacrifices or whatever. Yeah. So named after a really bad part of Israel's history.
I think that showed up in Kings,
yeah,
for sure. I'm not sure it did in Chronicles, but
yeah, because you know, yeah, the Kings and Chronicles are a little different. Then there was a daughter, and God said name her Lo Ruhamah, and the word Lo in Hebrew is a negative, so it's no or not. And Ruhamah is, in the NET translation, is pity. So Lo Ruhamah is no pity. And he says, I don't have pity on you right now. But in the future, in the kingdom, with the new covenant, you will be renamed Ruhamah. I will have pity on you again. Then the younger son is Lo Ami. And again, Lo, not. And the word Am is people. And then the I at the end is my, it's a possessive, so Ami is my people, Lo Ami, not my people. He says, you don't want to be my people right now, we're going to cut you off. You're going to be called, as far as everybody else is concerned, you're not my people. Now, he never completely wrote them off. Israel is still God's people. Right. But as far as what it looks like, they're not God's people. But when we go to the New Covenant passages, Ezekiel 36, Jeremiah 31, One of the aspects of the new covenant with Israel in the kingdom is you will be my people and I will be your God. And so here he says, you're going to be called not my people, Lo Ami, for a while. But in time, when you come back to me, you will once again be called on me, my people.
Yeah, so it's a cool thing. So it's really cool from the standpoint of individual people with their story and children and what they're going through.
Yep.
And then you take a step back and it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Same thing from God's level.
The last major thing that I would point out in chapters 4 and 5, God specifically addresses the priests and the false prophets.
Yeah, so the sin,
because they are the ones leading the people into sin. And what we have to remember is, you know, the church is different. The church doesn't have this hierarchy, priests and prophets. We're not a nation. We're not a complete, group where it all stands and falls together. Israel as a nation was. Israel as a nation rejected God through their leaders as their proxy. And Israel as a nation needs to return to him, and it will be through their leaders as a proxy. And so when their leaders are heading down the wrong path, that's why God calls them out specifically. You are, right. You're literally, I mean, he says you're eating, chapter 4, verse 8, they feed on the sin offerings of my people. They're literally consuming the, you know, they're eating, they're devouring the people. Yeah. And some of that was theirs under the law. That's how the priests were paid. Right. You know, they didn't have other jobs. That's right. How they lived. But the concept that the people were offering their sin offerings to God, the priests were eating it, and then leading them to other gods, is just this. I mean, it's almost funny if it were not so sad,
right?
You know, and so he just keeps he keeps laying this out, and for the rest of Hosea, that's where these prophecies go. He's very particular about here's what you've been doing, and here's what I'm going to do about it. But you can always, as I mentioned last week in Joel, there's always a call to repentance, always a call to come back.
Right. And I would say that's the upside, right?
Yeah.
That it is going to happen. And I think most of the times where, at least in the first five chapters, where there's this criticizing, there is that call. Every time there's a call.
Yep, there's always a call back. And the promise that when they do come back, not if, maybe, but when they do come back, I will restore.
Right.
And I will bless. I will.
Even better.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. So that's the big picture of these first five chapters. You know, this basically it includes the stuff that if anybody knows anything about Hosea, there it is.
Yeah, right.
And then really sets up the rest of the rest of the book.
All right. So any tidbits for what we're going to be reading next time?
He's just going to keep going over the next nine chapters. He's just going to keep going through some of these very specific
things.
Yeah.
So probably all of us fit in a category or two here.
Yeah. I mean, we have to remember that it is
specific point in time.
Israel. You know, specifically for Israel. But you know, there's definitely certain principles,
right.
You know, that we'll be able to draw. But yeah, if you haven't read Hosea in a long time or at all, you might be surprised at how much is in here. So, I think that
covers it. Yeah.
All right. Well, I hope you found it helpful. And as you do get into it, as always, if questions come up, there's something that we didn't cover. We're pretty high level in this video. Something we didn't cover, you got a question about, definitely, you know, feel free to ask and share the videos as always, and we will see you back next time, and we'll pick up in chapter 6.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.